actually, at this point, Alex is here. I don't know if I need to record. But
submit on camera. I'll listen to it if you're
recording. Okay, fair enough. So everyone got the Marukamos? This is probably going to be a two-part shiur. That's my estimation, which means that it's actually going to be a three-part shiur, knowing the way things work out, but we'll try. Kashrus of gelatin. And this is an issue which is still around and still percolating, and even though, technically speaking, it's been dealt with in tshuvos that are 80 to 200 years old. Nonetheless, first of all, some of the technology has actually changed in terms of how they're making gelatin today. There are different kinds and different processes. And number two, because the Jewish world has ended up with a split decision, which I think is unusual for us. It's not unusual for us to have a split decision. It's unusual for us to have an institutionalized split decision in which you will actually have, in Israel, hashgachas on products from valid accepted hashgachas that say kosher le'uchli gelatin. That's something that's not so normal for us. So it should be a fun topic. The basic outline of how I want to approach it is, first of all, to talk a little bit about what gelatin is and how it's produced. Then, once we've done that, to talk about two reasons to prohibit the use of gelatin, and then after that, three reasons to permit, before we get to some minor points at the end and some practical piskei halacha that are given. The reasons to prohibit will be, number one, it may be what's called a davar hamamid, because of the action it takes on the food, as we'll see, and therefore maybe it cannot be batel. And then the second reason would be because even if one will argue that it's now deteriorated and it's no longer really food, for reasons that we'll get to, nonetheless, maybe if I put it into food, that's called achshavei. I am now rendering it food. So those are the two reasons to prohibit. The reasons to permit, which really I would like to do first, theoretically, because they explain the reasons to prohibit also, but it doesn't work that way for reasons of structure. But the reasons to permit are that, number one, gelatin is produced from inedible parts of the animal, from bones and skins. Number two, it is dried out, exposed to acid and chemicals, and so on, rendered inedible. And number three, because maybe you could argue that gelatin is davar chadash. It's actually brand new. Meaning it ceases to exist. It stops being what it was before, when it was an us or part of an animal, and it becomes something entirely new. And then we have some minor points to add at the end, some other issues that come up at the poskim. So an individual posik will deal with that no one else thinks is a concern type of things. Okay. Going back to the beginning then. What is gelatin and how is it produced? So I gave you on your sheet there on the Marmakomos a piece from Rabbi Zusha Blech. His article is titled "Can These Bones Live?" or something like that, playing off the Atamos Ayavishos of Yechezkel. In brief, looking at what he says here, he says gelatin is a protein made from something called collagen, and collagen is found in living things. It is connective tissue found in, as it says in there, tendons, bones, and skins. When you cook the bones or other parts of the animal or the fish, the collagen dissolves, and when it cools off, then it gels, adding thickness. He actually had this note here that I had never known before, but I guess it sort of makes sense in a perverse way. When you buy gefilte fish in a jar, right, as opposed to getting a loaf and making it, so you know they have like this gel stuff in it, right? So he writes in his article that the reason why it's there, it's not like a byproduct of them making the fish, like it has to be there. They actually put there because they think the consumer wants it. Because when you make fish in the homemade way, when you cook the fish, the collagen that's there in the fish, in fact, once it cools off, will thicken in this way, so like they're trying to like make it like homemade. Yeah. Gross.
I know people who specifically like drink that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So for them, now it's worth $9 a jar, right? Until now it wasn't. Now it's gross, so it is. Okay. He also talks about in here psha, right? The cow's foot jelly. So in any case, what gelatin fundamentally is, it's a natural product that's in the animal and the fish that when you cook it, you get, and then once it cools off, it will congeal like this to create this gel kind of a texture, and that's what they're going to use in products as a means of making the product, like a pudding or something like that, have the texture that that they want. It's also used in medicines, in something that we'll have to discuss probably only at the end. But they use it in medicines, not just like the gel cap that you're familiar with, but also when they have an active ingredient and they want to shield it from other things that are going to be, that could potentially corrupt it, they actually spray the powder with gelatin in such a way. They have the technology such that each granule of the ingredient will be sealed in its own gelatin capsule of sorts, and it's tiny and it's minuscule. You won't notice it, and then that goes into the medication. But let's go with the first part. And the first part is, the first reason to prohibit is that it's a davar hamamid, and therefore it cannot be batal. That's the idea. It cannot be nullified in the mixture, even though it's a tiny portion of the mixture. So the even though it's a tiny portion of the mixture that you have in the end, let's say some of the classic cases that they dealt with gelatin are gelatin as an ingredient in ice cream, gelatin as an ingredient, obviously, in a pudding. So really, you're only using a small amount. However, it's what we call davar hamamid, which I'm now going to explain, is something that creates the texture of the total mixture, and therefore it cannot be batal. Well, take a look at source Aleph on the Maror Makomos, and we'll go through it, because it's not at all clear why davar hamamid is in batal, and that's part of the conversation. Yeah.
All this is assuming we use medical terms.
All this is assuming either non-kosher or non-shechted animals. It's a separate discussion we have to have about bas v'chalas and whether gelatin should be fleishig. So the short answer is that it's not. The short answer is that if gelatin is extracted from a kosher animal, then it will be parif. Ramosha has a tshuva on it. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamed Hey, its source Aleph, talks about the gzera of Gvinos Akum. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf Tes, I think it's Amud Beis, says that you're not allowed to have cheese made by Akum, and it's a rabbinic gzera. And Rabbi Yishmael challenges Rabbi Yoshua, or Rabbi Yoshua challenges Rabbi Yishmael, I forget which was which, saying, what is this for? And he gives him an answer. He doesn't like the answer, gives him another answer. He doesn't like the answer, and finally he distracts him with some other topic. And he takes him off onto the Pasuk, from Shir HaShirim, because he doesn't want to reveal the reason for the gzera, because the practice in Eretz Yisrael was they did not reveal reasons for gzeros for a year after making the gzera. That way, anybody who had a disagreement would lose, because after a year, it's already become standard practice, and therefore, any argument you're going to make is going to be defeated by, well, this is what we do. So
that's the reason why they did it.
The Gemara itself, Navodah Zarah Lamed Hey. So the Ayin Shom, it's a fun discussion. So the Gemara here asks, so my gezerto, what was this gezera of, and the brackets are my own additions. What's this gezera of Gavinos Akum? What is the reason anyway? So Amar Mishum and Pazi, Amar Mishum ben Levi, Mishum Nikur, because of Nikur. Nikur, as I added in brackets, means the biting of snakes, like giloy for liquids. And the concern is that snakes are going to have bitten this cheese, and they injected some kind of toxin venom into it. Lest you say, this sounds really strange, by the way, you can go online and find videos about how they extract venom from snakes, and you can see that actually, there are different kinds of snakes. There are spitters and there are biters, right? Like children. So there are various ways that this could actually take place. But in any case, that's the first explanation. The lema le mishum nigur. Yeah.
Why is that an issue with the cheese then? Can that be an issue with the nitrogen? Why specifically?
Right. So apparently, if you look in the Gemara Avodah Zarah earlier on, like in the Chafs, we find out that we know a whole lot about what snakes like to eat and don't like to eat. And apparently, certain foods had a greater concern.
That's a question. Why specifically non?
Because they're not monitoring.
So they wouldn't monitor the. Why would it
But like, why would they get hurt by the venom? So the Gemara says that they because of their diet, where they eat shkatzim, uramas, and creepy crawly creatures, their body temperature inside is actually higher, and therefore they're not damaged. Lest you say, that sounds really strange, you should know. There was an article on CNN's website about, I think, 4 or 5 months ago, in which some world health body, I don't remember which one, was trying to promote an insect-based diet. And one of the points that they make in the studies on insect-based diets is that those who eat those, it actually does, because of certain elements that they have in the insects in higher measure than other things, it will actually raise body temperature slightly.
Which is healthier?
Well, they have other reasons for it. That's not why they're pursuing it.
The background logic is because they're afraid that the world's going to run out of food and they want to...
Yeah, there's that too.
The chair is interesting. There's different insect-based foods in Africa and different places as well because they think it's, you know, you have the bugs and you figure they're starving. So
right. Well, the other reason that I heard, actually, one doctor told me another suggestion for why it would raise the body temperature has to do with parasites in their diet, and then... It causes infection in the system, and therefore their body temperature is higher. I mean, whether this has any connection to the way we understand medicine, I have no idea. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, they have this food, which has the venom in it, and it's not hurting them, but for us, it's indeed going to be harmful. But then he says, "Valema lemishum niker." Then why not tell him the reason? We have all sorts of gezeros because of animal toxins and gilui and the like. So he says, "Kedeula, like ula." Oh, here you go. And the Gemara here, hello. The Amar Ula, Ki Gazi Gzerta B'marava Lo Maglu Taima Tresi Arche Shasa. When they made a Gzer in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't reveal the reason for 12 months. Dilma Ika Inishla Svira Lei, because you could have someone who doesn't agree with it, but Asi Lizazule, and he'll mock it, and you know, undermine the Gzerah. Whereas after a year...
Didn't there also rule that it doesn't get accepted within a year, it's bottle?
So there's a separate issue of Gzer Shinet Tibioch Olam Odba. But I haven't heard that connected to this. It's an interesting idea. But I haven't heard it connected to...
Is there a limit for like how long you give it until you decide it? Like, I think I've heard a year. Is that yes or no?
I don't know. It's logical to connect it to the year, but I don't actually know. Okay. I would be interested in seeing a source with it.
Why would the year make a difference as whether or not they would mock it?
I think because it becomes standard practice.
They would only make it official after a year?
I'm saying the Gzira is official from the get-go, but they're not going to tell anybody the reason for a year.
Oh, the reason.
In order to avoid machlokas.
If it then who cares? It doesn't make sense. It's a tradition already.
Yeah. Magade Borabi Yermir.
If it didn't become accepted, how would that not become accepted? Like, how is there a concept that would there be that people would accept it?
So I'm gonna go a little further with this, just so that's it's a tangent. I'd be glad to talk to you about it afterwards. But Magade Borabi Yermir. So Rabbi Yermir challenges this, and he says, Elameata Yevesha Teshturi, Yashan Teshturi. He says, if that's really the reason, then you should be mutter to have the cheese if it's dried. You should be mutter to have it if it ages. And he's referring you back to something that Gemara says regarding wine, that with wine, if it has the venom in it, it won't age well. And he's suggesting that the venom would keep this cheese from aging properly. It would also keep it from drying out. The liquid would remain liquid. It wouldn't dry out. Dam Rabbi Chanina, as Rabbi Chanina says, Yavesh mutter. He says, if it's dried, it's actually mutter, because ain I added in ha'eres manichol yavesh, because this toxin from the snake won't let it dry, and yashan, if it's old, if it's aged properly, then mutter ain ha'eres manichol lishan, and the toxin in it won't allow it to age properly. So Rabbi Chanina says, you're right, that's not the reason. The reason is lefi efshar la belot zichzuchei chalav. He says, for sure there will be some milk in it, and his point is chalav akum. The point is that this cheese, even if the cheese wouldn't form as cheese with the milk of a treif animal, nonetheless it may have drops of milk from treif animals, and that's why we prohibit it. It has nothing to do with venom, nothing to do with snakes. It has to do with not getting the cheese from the non-Jewish dairy, because there may be drops of milk of treif from treif animals. Shmuel Amar, then we get to the point. Shmuel Amar, Bibnation Mamidin Osa Baor Kebas Nevela. Shmuel says that's not the issue. The issue is that they take a non-kosher animal's abomasum, right, one of the stomachs, the keva, and they put the milk in the hide of that stomach in order for it to go through the first stage of its development. And the key word there is ma'amidin. It's a davar ha-ma'amid. It will make the thing stand. That's the idea. So the Rambam, based on that, in source base, writes,
Telchas
Machalos Asiros Gimel Yud Gimel. So the Rambam paskins that that's the reason. He follows Shmuel.
the Gemara later on doesn't say we're not going to tell you the reason.
Yeah, the Gemara never. The Gemara, as far as I recall, does not actually have a definitive conclusion.
Well, because of the Shir Shirim distracting him, that's already later on.
Yeah, the Gemara then says, "Hey, let's distract you with Shir Shirim because we have another reason." The I mean, for practical purposes, yeah. In other words, he's saying Shmuel's right. Shmuel's right. The reason is Rabbi Genosa. So, because he didn't want to give him the reason.
That is the reason.
Yeah, but he didn't want to tell him the reason. Shmuel says it. Shmuel's generations later. Yeah. So the Rambam writes, Chachmei Mishnah Gerzwa Gvinas Akum Va'asarum Mipnei Shema Amidin Osa Ba'or Keva Shel Shchitasan Shehi Nevela. It's also because they put it in the bellies of these animals that they shechted. That's Nevela. Vim Tomar V'halo Or HaKeva Dabar Katan Hu Ad Ma'od V'cholav Sho'amad Bo V'lomo Lo Yibata V'mihuto. You're going to tell me that the hide is very small compared to the milk that they're storing in it, and show, and so it should be bato. But the answer is that it is what causes the cheese to stand. It gives it its firmness. It doesn't age. They don't age the cheese in the stomach. They take it out. But when the cheese is actually going to first solidify, that's in the stomach. Behold, the davar asur hu she'emid, since a prohibited item was what caused it to be omed, harei hakol asur kamo she'esbar, all is prohibited, as is explained. That's the that's what the Rambam writes. So davar hamamid is not batel. However, it's not so simple. Take a look at Zoris Gimel Mishnah in Chulin. Mishnah says hamamid boor shal keva kishera. If you put milk in the belly of a kosher animal, the for it to stand im yesh beno saint tam harezo asura. Then if the hide is able to affect the taste of the milk becoming cheese, then it's asur. Implication is only if there's taste involved. What do you mean?
It seems that, as you said, the only function is for it to stand. So what taste would the stomach emit into it?
So one hypothetical possibility is that they didn't dry it and clean it properly, and therefore there's a little bit of flesh that's actually attached to it. Yeah. But it's only if there's taste. We didn't say anything about taste in Avodah Zarah. This is very important when you're dealing with gelatin, because gelatin does not affect the taste at all. It's only there for structure. So is my concern taste, or is my concern mamid? So the Rambam there, in his parish to the Mishnah, Source Dalet, explains. Ve'ein anu omrim kan hakol holech achar hamamid. Here we don't say it all follows the mamid. Right, like we did before. Kevan shamamid atzmo davar hamuter be'eno, because here it's a meat milk issue. It's a kosher animal, right? In Sois Gimel, it's a kosher animal and it was shechted properly. So the mamid is actually muter in its own right. Lefishu basar shluta. V'lo nolad ha'isser ela machmas hataroves bilva. The only thing that's going to make the cheese usser is the mixture of meat and milk. Aval chalav shehuam bekevas or kevas nevela. Right? If you're putting it in the nevela, so the nevela itself is asur. It has nothing to do with taste. It has to do with simply, is there anything of the nevela that's there in the cheese? Something of the nevela is in the cheese. It's the mamid. Right? Having nothing to do with any taste. Since the mamid itself is asur, and you follow the mamid. And he says, see what I wrote in Avodah Zarah, that's why their cheese is off limits. So what he's telling me is that if it's a meat milk issue, where it's a matter of the taroves, then the taste is what matters. It's not enough to be a mamid, it has to also inject taste. Whereas if the item itself, the mamid itself, is asur, then it's independently usher, then as a mamid, it's already going to be, it already will not be vatal. And that's the way the Rambam rules. I brought it for you in Source Hay. You don't need to walk through, I mean, you can read it for yourself, but it's just the sum of what he said in, as it appears in Mishnah Torah. Got it?
Yeah. So the reason is because it's confusing?
The reason for what?
The Rambam's chiluk is that if the stomach seems aser to the person who's eating the cheese, it's confusing to him.
I don't think that's where he's going. I think what the Rambam is saying is there are two different ways that the stomach could affect the cheese. Right? Method number one, in which the stomach affects the cheese, is the stomach itself is aser, like nevela, right? And then some of that nevela is in your cheese. That happens with taste, but it also happens without taste as a mamid. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the stomach affects your cheese because the stomach is meat and your cheese is dairy and there's a meat-milk mixture being produced.
But theoretically, they're both different. They're both different things, right? It doesn't actually affect it in the sense that it gives it taste.
Correct.
So it's more of a confusion.
No issue of confusion. What we're saying is, if there is no taste, then it's not going to be usur. Your cheese is going to be mutter. Your cheese does not become a basar b'chalav problem if there is no taste of basar actually being injected.
Right.
Mamid is irrelevant.
It becomes an avela problem if it's not a shachet.
Correct. Correct.
But it doesn't. You can't derive benefit from an avela. So the fact that you're using its stomach to produce cheese.
I don't have to benefit from an avela.
That you can't.
Yeah. No benefit from basar b'chalav. I can benefit from an avela. I may not be allowed to engage in business selling it as my product. There's a unique issue of selling trefos.
But you're allowed to...
But you can benefit from it, Avela. Yeah. Lagera asher b'sharecha titena v'achala o machor l'nachri, the pasuk says. So give it to the girtoshav, or sell it to a non-Jew. So yeah, explicitly. In the Torah, you're allowed to benefit. So that's the idea. That's why these sources are different. But for us, then, when we're talking about gelatin, if the gelatin is coming from a kosher animal... Right? If the gelatin is coming from a kosher animal, and it's just a mommy that doesn't inject taste, I have no issues, even if it's in a dairy product. Whereas if my gelatin is, and that's even if I would say the gelatin is lesion,
What about Bidul Isur Lechatchila? The whole thing we spoke about last time.
Right, the problem with Bidul Isur Lechatchila may still be an issue. That's true.
It may still be an issue, right.
I'm not recommending that people go do this. But my point that I want to make is that if the gelatin is from a non-kosher animal, even though there's no taste, that will still be a problem. That's the point. I wanted to get to the Isser side, not to the Hadr side. I shouldn't have given the Hadr example. You're right, because it's not so straightforward. So that's the idea. Now, the truth is the Prima Gadim in Source Vav says, you have to realize, the Dabar HaMamid Delo Batil Hu Gam Kein Mid Rabbanan. This is in his section, in his Sharat HaRovos, that deals with Dabar HaMamid in general. If you want to know about Dabar HaMamid, look in the Prima Gadim there. You can find it in the back of the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeah. So he says that Dabar HaMamid not being nullified in a mixture is a derabanan. V'af b'manda omar b'tayma hava min ha-Torah moded b'mamid de'ein bo tam elahaolu pulaso nikar gazu be'rabanan. He says even according to the view that if it injects taste, it is in fact a biblical issue. If it doesn't inject taste, it's going to be a derabanan. He says everybody will agree this is a derabanan. That's going to matter. For multiple reasons, because we may have other derabanans to include. So, in other words, something may be a derabanan because of this, and then a derabanan because of something else, and so on. And therefore, that may cause kulos. So, recognize that. So, if the mamid comes from something that is asur, then lack of taste is irrelevant, and it's still not batal. The Rama had this come up. The Rama is a tshuva, not on gelatin, because modern extraction of gelatin doesn't exist in the Rama's time. But they used to congeal things also. The Rama's tshuva is tshuva nundalid. He's dealing with olive oil that they wanted to transport from point A to point B in barrels. And the problem they had was that the barrels would absorb a lot of the olive oil. Right? Like our Sherry Cass discussion. So the barrels would absorb the olive oil. What they would do is they would add lard to the barrel, to the olive oil, and it would cause the olive oil to congeal during transportation, and therefore it wouldn't get absorbed in the barrels. And then they had another ingredient they would add to liquefy it at the end. And the Rama says this is mutter. Yeah. So the Rama says that this is mutter. Why? Because his point was that it's that they liquefy it at the end. He discusses this as a Dabar HaMamid. But then he said the reason why it's okay is it's not called a Dabar HaMamid. Because at the end of the process, they liquefy it. So therefore, it's not truly called a mamid. It's a temporary thing, but ultimately they're going to cancel out its action altogether. Which, to go back to your question, Hill, about why is a mamid not batel, suggests that the reason a mamid is not batel is not because of the action that takes place. Because if so, the olive oil will be just as usur. But rather, it's because a mamid has a certain standing. There's a chashivas to a mamid, and in the Rama's case, there's no chashivas because it's only a temporary thing. So yes, along the lines of Beria, so it would appear. But the fact that the Rama needs to say that, the reason why this isn't the problem is because they're going to nullify it at the end, says that otherwise, even though there's no taste injected, the Mamid would still make this asr. That's the point. The Ramah is not concerned with bitul issa. Well, it's being done by non-Jews.
It's
being done by non-Jews. It's their business. It's their olive oil business.
So you're saying can you use the olive oil? Is it kosher to use that olive oil?
Yeah, as I shit the Ramah.
Aren't you worried that there's going to be a little bit of like some little bit of lard left in the olive oil when they're done taking it out? Or like,
no, because presumably, they're adding whatever they do. I don't know how this works in terms of getting the chemicals out.
But there's going to be some kind of residue in the olive oil.
No, you don't extract the olive oil from the lard. You just change the whole format of that. You now solid into a liquid.
Right.
You don't have to do like a huge distillation to take out all that lard. You take a liquid, you put something in, it becomes a solid.
No, we're taking
the something in, it becomes a liquid.
What we are indicating here is that the is that as far as bitul issa chatchila, we've paskined with those who said don't worry about it, the non-Jew is doing it, and so on, like we said in the shir last week. That's as far as the bitul issa chatchila. And as far as this, whatever's still there, whatever particles are still there, is going to say rabatul. Because it's not a mamid, and therefore it's able to be batal.
Is it considered a davar acher, like you said?
Davar chadash?
A davar chadash?
I don't think so. For reasons that we'll get to when we get to davar chadash, but we're not going to get there today. But the Har Tzvi also brings this as well. The Har Tzvi, or Tzvi Pesach Frank, dealt with this issue in terms of ice cream. And they were, again, the same issue, using gelatin in the ice cream to give it its texture. And he said it's not batal, even though it doesn't provide taste. For general material on Ma'amid, you really should take a look at that Prima Gadim in Shara Tarovos, Gimel Aleph. But that's the argument then, that it should not be batel, the gelatin should not be batel, it's a davar ha-Ma'amid, and therefore you can't be mebatel it. Leave aside in bitul issa lechatchila, it was produced by a non-Jewish manufacturer without Jews in mind, and so on. The response to this argument...
How do you say they use the gelatin in ice cream there for its trade?
Yeah.
Because it stays, the effect is lasting forever.
Yeah. The effect isn't, you don't withdraw it and get it. I mean, it's not that the effect doesn't last forever, you can melt your ice cream.
That's the same thing as aspirin on gel.
So that's correct. That will be the argument. That is exactly right. The response to this comes from Rav David Zvi Hoffman in Malamed Lahoil. He was dealing with a question of kalim in which food had been cooked, meat had been cooked with gelatin in it, gelatin from non-kosher sources. So his argument is very straightforward in Sur Zion. He says, "V'hada asui gam kein lahavos harotef." Granted that this will thicken the sauce, yeshli stapik harbe ihavi kamo davar hamam. There's a lot of room for doubt as to whether this is called a davar hamam. And I know we're barachlis from thinking this also, because it's the sort of thing you would think of. Da eno nikpa kamo gavina. This isn't like a cheese action in which you take a liquid and now it becomes a solid, right? The cheese is frozen, so to speak. Here you're thickening a liquid so that it'll be less liquid. But you're not going from liquid to solid. And he says, even if you'll say it's sort of like a davar ma'amid, and he says, look, the whole davar ma'amid thing, he believes is a derabbanan anyway.
The importance how much of a solid it's making or how much you need to change it is? The second one? Like, if you need to have, I guess, something which is like a little bit less liquidy, and that's exactly what you need, then who cares? It's not making it a complete solid. That should be considered davar ma'amid.
But two things. The question is why davar ma'amid is also. And you have two ways to go here. The prima gadim and the melamed lehoil also, everyone that would speak about nikar, then they would not care so much how much it is important to you, as they would say how much there was an objective difference. If there is an objective, I can very clearly show you the difference between before and after I added the gelatin, then it's nikar. I don't care how much you want it, as I care how much there is a difference that can be shown. But if we take the other side of davar ha-ma'amid, which I think would also make it a deoraita, that is the davar ha-ma'amid is also because it's some kind of a gorem, and I don't know if it's going to happen later, but if you take this line of thinking, that it's like we speak about machamitz, right? That machamitz is a gorem. We don't speak about ma'amid, we speak about gorem, because you understand that it's a new... The whole tikkun of the ma'achal was caused by that. Even someone said about melach last time, that it's called the gorem, right?
Yeah. Because,
so if we go in that direction, and that would maybe even be a deoraita, because gorem is a deoraita, then it would depend if that is a tikkun, and not if the difference is big or small. That's how I would, without right now going to the sources, that's what I would...
The problem is that no one really gets into this. in all the poskim who discuss this, they all either they're concerned about Ma'amid and they say it's a problem, or they leave it and they don't address Ma'amid. You know, it's like Ma'amid wasn't.
There's a myth of Koran that says that Ma'amid is Gorem and said they're like that.
Yeah. It's the board of discussion. Right. Okay, take a look around.
What's your problem? What's he trying to prove with this?
It's not called the Ramah.
Isn't
Ramah? No, not the Ramah. The Jalatin case.
Oh, every case is Jalatin.
Yeah, he's not. Ramah isn't Jalatin. Ramah is some right. is a gelling ingredient. Right. Right. But the he's going to say that Jalatin is never called the Ramah.
What's his case?
His case was Jalatin that was cooked with meat in a pot, and now the question is the pot tray. That was his case.
There wouldn't be done on me for anything because you weren't making anything.
You would liquefy the gelatin by cooking it.
Yeah. Well, you liquefy the gelatin by cooking it, but that doesn't bother me. It's the gelatin's impact on the rest of the food.
What were you making? I'm thinking of the sauce.
Like
the chow, basically?
I guess, yeah. Sorry?
And then it has an impact. It will emit the taste of the gelatin. So, does gelatin have a taste?
We're assuming gelatin does not. It's just a protein.
It has zero taste.
Yeah.
Dalarami, you probably Leo's also, you have a Leo with Dalaramis.
So I don't think so.
So then why would there be any problem? If the gelatin is giving off any pounds, then why would cooking it in a pot? What effect is it?
He's trying to think of the sauce.
Well, the question is the sauce now treif? And there's a whole other discussion of whether you're willing to say chaticha nas as nevela.
Oh, that's right.
It's like it doesn't invest taste.
Yeah.
I didn't get into it here.
Okay.
If
you're not saying that, then how can we give, so the food might be altered as davar mummy, but what they're giving to the clay, will be kosher.
You talking about the clay here?
Yeah, he's talking about the kale.
So maybe it's not a rag, and maybe it doesn't disagree with the arts.
Well, he does disagree. I mean, he says explicitly it's not mummy. Yeah. The second of the reasons to prohibit this is because, and again, here's where we're really going about this backwards. Really, I should be giving you the reason to permit, being that the gelatin is nifsal me'achilas adam. Because you take the bones and you grind them up and then you run them through chemicals and so on. And then, that's the reason to permit. And then the reason to...
You can't eat it because it's not shem basar.
Because you can't... Well, no, two different things. Number one, you can't eat it is our discussion right now. Separately, there's a discussion of davar chadash that now maybe it's no longer meat, it's something else. Those are actually two different things.
Well, the first one is not edible. You can't eat it because the meat just says you can't eat it.
You can only eat it when it's put into food. It's not food. It's powder.
Because like that would
be a different reason than davar chadash why it's
yes.
not meat?
Yes, as we'll see. God willing. Not this year. We're not going to get to it this week. We'll get to it next. But the God willing. But the but yes, that will be actually a completely separate argument.
Didn't we see in the introduction that it's only remnants of meat that are cooked, and that's where the gelatin comes as a result? Meaning, he didn't say this whole process of grinding anything, or so seemingly a bit from that, it would just be, I mean, it wouldn't be different than the actual original bone or meat or whatever it was.
I don't understand.
You just said that the whole process is that it's ground up and everything. In the introduction, he didn't say anything about grinding anything up. He just said it was
correct.
So
that's the simplest way to generate it. But the way they generate it practically is through this process. Okay. Yeah. He actually does elsewhere in his article. I didn't bring you his whole article, but I gave you the link so you can find it. Yeah.
This is the last source. When it says nakva kamogina, eno nakva kamogavina.
In the nakva kamogavina, yeah.
Could he be saying there as opposed to, he's just saying that gelatin isn't like cheese, or gelatin here isn't like gelatin?
No. Eno is referring to your rotev, to the sauce. The rotev, the sauce, will not be hardened like cheeses.
And therefore it's not a nakva.
And therefore this isn't a dharma, because it didn't do any mind.
Oh, but if it was the same gelatin and cheese, maybe that same gelatin would be treif and cheese.
If it was the same gelatin in cheese,
maybe it would say that's treif.
You mean gelatin hardening cheese? Gelatin can't harden. In other words, that's not what gelatin does. No. Gelatin doesn't make cheese. Rennet makes cheese. It's an enzyme. But in terms of what the post can do with this, the other side of the Mekilim is to say, this stuff, this gelatin, isn't usher in the first place. So don't bother me about whether it's a mamid or not a mamid, because we don't have to go there. It's not usher. And the reason it's not usher is among the reasons why it's not us is because it's ground up and dried and exposed to acid and phosphor and all this other stuff. That's their argument to be made kill. So the response to that is the second reason to prohibit that I bring here. And that's
Wait, what form is gelatin in?
When it's used commercially?
Before,
the powder?
Before you put in your sauce or whatever, before you heat it up.
Right, so they do it commercially, and you're not doing it in your house. So as far as I know, it's in powder form, but I don't actually know for sure. Just the way it's described, it sounds like it's in powder form, but I couldn't tell you. So the issue of achshavei begins in Igmar Pesachim in Source Ches. What's that, the mashim?
אני חושב שזה הרמב״ם. הרמב״ם אומר, גם בפירוש המשנה וגם כאן, הוא אומר שיש חומרה יותר גדולה בגבינה ומעמיד מאשר בסתם ביצורים שלא מתבטלים. אפילו מלח, למשל.
Yeah.
או תבלין. הוא אומר, תבלין לא מתבטל, אז התבלין אסור, אבל הגבינה לא נעשית נבלה.
Yeah.
או האוכל.
Right.
הוא אומר, אז בגבינה, הגבינה נעשית נבלה, כי כולה מועמדת על ידי הדבר המעמיד.
Yeah.
כלומר, אז מכאן ראיה שהוא לא רואה דבר המעמיד רק כמניעת ביטול, okay. כי זה ניכר, כמו פרימגדים רוצה להגיד. אלא נשמע שזה לא רק מניעת ביטול, זה גורי ממש. כל הגבינה היא תולדה של הדבר שהעמיד אותה.
Yeah.
ואז לפי זה אנחנו לכאורה...
Right.
אני חושב
Hello, you catch that? He's got a source in the Rambam that potentially sounds like you can make the argument that it's that the cheese, in the case of the cheese, the rennet, is actually what causes the entirety of the cheese. Like, it's the key factor that creates what you
yeah.
have
to do for.
Well, the Rambam is saying that? The Rambam is saying that because he says that, let's say that I have דבר שאין טעמו בטל, such as a tavlin. So, I throw a tavlin into meat. The tavlin is tavlin of tumor, something is asur, but, so the tavlin is asur, you cannot eat the meat, but the meat is not becoming yachatichat nevela by itself. It's only has a taharovet of an isur that I cannot be mevatel, so I cannot eat the meat. But if it would fall into a nukdeira, the shishim I need is only shishim against the tavlin, not shishim against the meat, because the meat was not asur. But if I am throwing this chatichah shel keiva into the milk, and now the milk is becoming a gvina, the whole gvina would be considered as a nevela.
Right.
Because it's not only a ta'arovet, but the gvina itself is now a toleda of the ma'amid thing.
So this is something that is giving birth.
Exactly. It's an isur gorem and not a ta'arovet. That's the main argument.
Yeah. So the second approach, this achshavei, reason to prohibit, if you take a look in Source Ches, the Gemara Pesachim, Amar Rava, Chircha Kodem Zimano, Mudr Bahana. If you burn chametz before Pesach, before chametz becomes Aser, then Mudr Bahana, you're allowed to benefit from it. Afil Achar Zimano. Even after chametz becomes Aser, you will still be allowed to benefit from the chametz. That's the Gemara there. Even though chametz is Aser Bahana, it's going to be Mudr if you destroyed it before Pesach started. That's the idea. However, there's a machlokas we've shown him on this because of the Gemara's language. The Gemara's language was mutar bahana. What about achila? Would you be allowed to eat it or only allowed to benefit from it? Make the argument.
Hey, what is that achila then?
You have to be very, very careful with the chametz. You can't even go near to it. Is that right?
So?
It's so close that it was coming, so let me go, even if it's what's called a shrine.
It doesn't seem it's cold now, right?
No, it's singed. It's singed to the point where it's blackened, but it, theoretically you could still ingest it. I'm using the word ingest and not eat for reasons that are clear. Right, let's see what we do with this.
Either it's food or it's not food. It's just either it's still chametz once it's burnt and it still has the status of chametz or it doesn't anymore, and that's why you can. I mean, I guess you should be able to.
Then you should be able to eat it and have hana. But then why did the Gemara say hana? Because if the Gemara had said achila, I would have known hana is fine for sure. The fact that you say hana, it sounds like only hana. On the other hand, you can make the argument that hana is the only thing that's permitted. Because, well, we'll see. I don't want to jump the gun here.
No, chametz is extremely complicated because you also have an halacha of bitul, and one might argue that if I burn the chametz, it has to be mevatelit.
Right.
So, and then it has nothing to do with other isurim. I would, instead of bringing chametz, maybe we should bring the raya from the end of tumura.
The reason I bring this is because I have the Ran and the Rush, and they spell it out very clearly, so that's why I like this. But in a Hanami, the Gemara, the next Gemara talks about which Isurim have to be buried and which Isurim have to be burned, and we get into the discussion of what happens if you burn it and then you have ash, but the ash now gets used.
But we're looking at the
issue of Achshavei in general.
I can't think of the relationship to gelatin, but I think he's trying to set a precedent that you're going to consider that by burning chametz, by burning any type of food at any time, is something that's bottle. It's gone. And if you're going to use that for Pesach, then even beforehand, it should be so for both Hana and for Achila.
Right, but we're not concerned with trying to keep people honest right now. We're concerned with what's the halacha, what happens if they did it. You're right, it may be a good precaution to take, but I want to know, bottom line, what's the law, separate from any gezerah.
But it's based on the gezerah of Pesach, which says that by burning on Pesach, you're mevatel the food where you can't have Hana and you can't have Achila.
Right.
So then, not even so now, why would you be able to change that by burning the food with that intention?
Well, I burned it before Pesach.
But you had that same intention.
So what? I burned it before Pesach. It wasn't Usser. So I had that intention.
It's also not Usser until Erev Pesach, yet we stop eating chametz.
Well, that's because of confusion about time. That's because we don't want you to get the wrong time. Let's see what we do with this. The Ran says in source tests, Udamrinan Mutter Bahana also, Bidinu da filu bachila nami shari. He says you're allowed to eat it also, not just allowed to benefit from it. Kevin Shiyatsu mitaras pas, kodim shiyachabo iser chametz. It's not being bred before the chametz kicked in. Ela lafisha in derech achila belachem, belachem charuch, sorry, but since that's not normally the way we eat, we don't eat burnt bread. Therefore it said you're allowed to benefit from it. It's because no one wants to eat this. That's why I used the word ingest when I was talking to Rabarach about it. Even if you were to eat it, you wouldn't be eating it. You would just be benefiting from it in some sense. Your stomach is fuller. But it's not. This isn't eating. So the Ran says, technically speaking, it's mutter b'achila and mutter b'hana. The Rush disagrees, and the Rush is the one who matters for our discussion. In source Yud, he says, "Yesh shirotzim lomar lav davka hana dua dinami achila de afra ba'almahu." Right? He's referring to the Ran. That some want to say you're allowed. V'lo mistaber, but he says not logical. The ava pi de bala das ha'ochel itzel kol adam mikomakom kevin de ihu ka'achile aser. He says, granted that nobody else would eat this, but he's eating it. And by eating it, he demonstrates that this is considered to be food. Correct. But for him, it's food. In a Hanami, you're 100% right. But for him, it is food right now. And so the Minchas Kohen says, this is indeed an Isur de Rabbanan. And he says, you see it in the Rambam. If you take a look at Source Yud Aleph, the Rambam Menachos Machalos Asuras Perek Yedalid says, "Kol ha'ochlin asurin eino chayv alei mad shiocholos in derech hanah." If food is asur, then you're not liable until you eat it in the way that people enjoy it, except for basar v'chalav and kilei hakerem, which are asur v'hanah. That's their own thing. Fine. Then you jump to halacha yed aleph. Keitzad? How so? Hari shehimcha as hachela v'gom o. If you melted fat and swallowed it kishu cham while it was still hot, ad shenich v'gorono mimenu, to the point it was so hot that a person burns his throat. O she'achal chelev chai, or he just ate raw fat. O she'irev devarim marim, or he mixed in bitter stuff, going rosh v'lana, wormwood, whatever, letoch yai nesach, o letoch yadir shal nevela, v'achlan kishen marim, he ate them when they were bitter. O she'achal ochel ha'osur achar she'isriach v'hivish, or he ate prohibited food after it had already rotted, u'batla me'ochel adam, and it's no longer human food. Harei zeh potter. Right? Potter means osur. Just like your potter. It's asur mid derabanan. Right? When we say potter, it means you're not allowed to do this, but if you did it, Beis Din isn't going to hold you liable. It's a rabbinic prohibition. But if you mix in something bitter into milk, which are asur ba'ana, then you'll be chayav. Because those are asur ba'ana, not just asur ba'achila. His point is and this is where the Minchas Kohen draws from it, that there's a rabbinic prohibition against eating something which is inedible because it's you are now making it like food. And this is what we call achshave. You considered it to be food. If we want general material on achshave, look at the Shagas Aryeh Tshuva Ayin Hey. It's a very long tshuva, and he has a lot of fun.
There's also like some running prohibit like cologne and mouthwash on Pesach because they think like some unfortunately like, you know some people might actually drink that you know, because of achshave on Pesach.
So that's a little bit of a separate thing. That's a little bit of a separate thing because it's not just a matter of whether people who are you know addicted are going to drink it, but it's actually if it's restorable, right? If it has restorable denatured alcohol in it, then that's a it's actually not no it's not in this category of no longer food.
Oh, it's actually yeah. considered in the category
yeah.
of food, or
yeah.
Oh, wow.
So the question then is: should we say achshave for gelatin? Right, the gelatin goes through all this processing that I've referred to. So maybe it's no longer food. But on the other hand, we could employ achshave. Rav Aaron Cutler in his Mishnas Rabbi Aaron says that it is achshave because people mix it in intentionally. So that makes it achshave. It's in Yeredeya Tesvav Tes, and in Yud Zayin. Mishnas Rabbi Aaron is not available in Hebrew books, so I couldn't bring you to in the original. However, Rav Chaim Ozer disagrees, as does Rav Adi Yosef. Well, at least quote this week. We've got a lot more to see from him next week. But Rav Adi Yabiyomer Chelek Ches Yeredeya Yud Aleph quotes Rav Chaim Ozer and Achiezer Gimel Lamed Gimel. Rav Chaim Ozer, of course, is known as the one who wrote the Tshuva permitting gelatin that started the cascade on the topic. But in Source Yud Beis, the Achiezer writes Biyad Avram Sham Kasav the Iker Mishum Achshave. He's referring to a separate discussion of achshave, like the case of chametz where you burned it before the time. Where we say that even if something is no longer edible to a dog, like in the case of the burned chametz, you're still not allowed to eat it. He tells you to see the Shagas Aryeh. But then he writes, he says the concern of achshave only applies if you eat it itself. Just really the achshave, where we're going to say, yeah, you now turned it into food. But if you turn it into a fine powder, litzarech ha'amada, for the sake of making something you know, have a firmer texture, umamid bazeh, and your mamid with it, in bazeh achshave, he says, that's not achshave. Achshave means I turned it into food by eating it the way you eat food. Here, I took a powder and I mixed it into something to have an effect on it. I never said, this is food to me. So therefore, Chaim Ozer argues, and Rav Ovadia agrees, that the achshave is not relevant here. And if we're going to say it's nifsal me'achilas kelev or nifsal me'achilas adam, we have to see that next week, then it's not. Then it's indeed going to be mutter. That's the argument that the Achiezer makes. The Tshuvas van Hagos in Beis Shin Pei Aleph at the end of his tshuva discusses options for a patient with medication involving gelatin if you are concerned for achshave, and he talks about possibly mixing in something with a bitter taste to say in order to kill the achshave element of it. It's worth seeing in a separate discussion. But those are the two reasons that are brought to prohibit. Number one is Devar Mamed, and number two, it is nifsal. It's an achshave issue. We've done it backwards because we still have to get to the reasons to permit, which trigger those. So we have to talk about the question of these being bones and hides.
You need to assume both in order to be osur. It's not two independent reasons. You need both. I mean,
yes.
Even if you have
achshave. Even if it's achshave,
it's button. It's button.
Yeah.
So you need. Here it's not because it's mommy, then I'll ask you, yeah, but it's not an issue. So you tell me it's an issue because it's achshave.
You need both. Proportions, it's always
achshave. Yeah, that's my understanding. Okay. So the reasons to permit starts with the reason that it's only bones and hides. Now we're not going to finish this right now, but at least since it's only 11:20 and we said it's 11:30, we'll start on it and then we'll review it quickly in the beginning of the next year. The question is: are bones and hides part of the animal's body? So you take a look at Source Yud Gimel, please. Mishnah and Chulin talk. talks about elements that are not considered to be part of the animal's body as far as Tumah is concerned. The Adam look up. The or ha'orva rotev v'akipa v'ha'olol v'atzamos v'agidin v'akarnayim v'atzlafayim. Okay, or is the hide of the animal. I'm going to skip the other items in the interest of time, but atzamos are bones. All of these are mitzarf and latame tumas ochlim, avolo tumas nebelos. They're considered to be part of the animal to reach a shear for tuma of food, but not for tumas nevelos. The Bartanuic says even for tumas ochlin, they only count if they're mitzdarif with flesh. Independently, they would not qualify as food. Where do we get this idea from that the bone is not considered to be part of the animal's body? It's a Gemara in Chulin Sersi Dalet, Chulin Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, where the Pasuk says, V'cholan ogeya benivlasa, anyone who touches it's nevela. The word benivlasa is superfluous there, because you know you're talking about nevela in context. So the Gemara says, benivlasa, only if you touch the actual nevela, veloba or, not the hide, veloba atzmosav, not the bones, veloba gidin or the sinews, veloba or gidin or technically the neurovascular bundles, veloba karnayim, the horns, veloba tlafayim or the hooves. These are not called part of the nevela. Now, the source there seems to be tumah, not kashrus. Nonetheless, take a look at source Tezvav. At the Rambam, Hachos Macholos Asiros Perek Dalet Halach Yiches. Ha'ochel mi nevela utrefa, omi behema v'chaya hatmeim, but specifically, min ha'or, min ha'atzamos, min ha'gidin, min ha'karnayim, min ha'tlafayim, min ha'tzipornayim, shel of, min mekomo shemivatzeis misham dam kishei echotchu. If you eat from the hide, the bones, the gidin, the horns, the hooves, or the nails of the bird, from the part where, if you were to cut it, they would actually, it would bleed. Or from the placenta, asur, granted you're not allowed to do it, however, you're still potter, because these are not suitable for eating, just in themselves, they're not suitable for eating. Why then am I not allowed to eat them? If it's not suitable for eating, why is it asur? So there are different approaches that are taken. The Tshuvas van Hagos in Beis Shin Pei Aleph says that some say that the Rambam actually frames this as a deoraisa. But he doesn't say who. He doesn't say where he's getting it from or who it would be who would view this as a deoraisa. Rav Moshe in Igros Moshe Yeredeya, Beis Lamed Beis, says that perhaps it's deoraisa from some limud, maybe it's a derabanan. No one knows.
The Rambam said asur.
Yeah, but why?
Asur deoraisa.
No, he didn't say deraisa.
Yeah,
that's what it usually means. But no one knows what derabanan you'd be talking about. What is this? Where's the derabanan? Where's the deraisa? The Tshuvas on Hagos floats an idea, which I told him Baruch for fun the other day, just to get a reaction. He floats the idea that this is chatzi shir. If I had Hillel here, I would tell him Hillel also. He also would have enjoyed it. That this is chatzi shir in echus. In quality. In other words, just like we have an idea that a shear is usher in terms of quantity, and chatzi shear is also usher, even part way, so too here, this is chatzi shear in quality. Meaning, it's food, but it's not food. It's sort of part way to being food. Yeah. That was a really remarkable idea. The shear was fun, for sure.
No,
it's a very hard idea.
The reason why chatzis shir is also according to one opinion is because it could be your full shir. It's impossible to be your full shir. It'd be a separate thing you'd be eating afterwards.
You can never reach full shir with it unless you would eat something else. In a hanami, it's a good point. I mean, the whole idea, he doesn't seem to be like stuck on it. Doesn't seem to be like this is his svari. He just sort of floats it as an idea.
According to what you mean, chatzis shir would be before, but only according to that one opinion, so it's like limiting it.
Yeah. In a hanami. No one can argue that the Rambam says it's mutter. The Rambam doesn't say it's mutter. The question is, no one understands, at least that I've seen, I haven't seen anybody explain what this iser is. The Shulchan Aruch says, it's not part of the nevela. Finished. They look at source Tezayin. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Chatichas nevela sheish mabasa v'atzamos, shenachal k'deras heter. He's dealing with a tarovis case, right? A mixture. So if you have nevela with flesh and bone, and they together fall into a pot. Atzmos ha'iser mitzdarfem in ha'heter levatel ha'iser. The bones from this usser meat combined with whatever mutter stuff was already in the pot to be mevatel, to cancel the iser that's there. So I look at the bones of the iser as though they were mutter. You follow what we did? When I measure the volume to be mevatel the iser, the bones of the iser come in on the mutter side. Obviously. That's the Shulchan Aruch. So he acts as though this is mutter legamri. The Rama says, v'yesh machmirim, some are strict, shalom litzarif atzmos ha'isr imai heter levato. He says, there is one of the Hagos in Nagah Shari Dura from the Or Zeruah to say that you should be strict and you should not combine the bones with the heter. Umakom hefsed yesh lismoch ha'makilim u'metirin. However, in a case of loss, you could depend on the permissive view, ki chein ikar. Because that is ikar. That's the view. So based on that, we say they are not considered to be part of the body. They're considered to be something alien to the body as far as kashrus is concerned. That will not necessarily permit you to eat the bones.
So the Shulchan Aruch is rejecting the Rambam? It says it's not there?
He sounds like he's accepting the Potter part and rejecting the Usher part, no? Now, you could say he's talking about Tarofus. Something already fell in and it's a bidya. Maybe you could suggest that. The question of what the Shulchan Aruch will do with the Rambam, though, is one that Rav Avadya deals with that I want to come back to next week, because I don't want to rush this. There are two steps we have to go through before we deal with the Shulchan Aruch will do with the Rambam. Rav Avadya is going to say yes, he rejects the Rambam. That's going to be his answer. Yeah.
He says that the bones are not necessarily treated, but that includes also the marrow in the bones, because the marrow in the bones can be substantial.
That's an interesting question. I haven't seen it addressed. Ostensibly, the marrow would be usur. Because the marrow, you're right, is pure, it's perfectly edible.
But it's part of the atzamas at this point. So it's like, it's within the atzamas.
You can't take it out beforehand.
Marrow is not connective tissue. Marrow is different. Mm-hmm. Marrow is not what's producing the gelatin.
It's not?
No. Connective tissue, as I understand it, is not the marrow. Connective tissue is between the bones.
But it's not the gelatin in the
marrow.
Yeah.
I thought the gelatin was with the was part of the marrow, part the connective tissue, part like kind of like a mixture, because like the gelatinous substance, I think, is a little bit from the marrow. I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't think so.
It reminds me of, you make like chon, and you get the marrow out.
Yeah,
it looks like
marrow.
The same marrow that you get out of a chicken, the same gelatin stuff that you get out of the chicken when you make your chicken. You let it, all the sauces come out, and then you put it in the fridge.
Okay, so I have homework to do, and that is to find out where is the, I don't believe that the marrow is what's there, is what's producing it, but I will look into it.
That's interesting.
All right, so God willing, we'll pick up with this next week.
Sure.